All right, and welcome into a special edition of the eighth round, the Mocking the Drafts podcast. It's kind of has a Kentucky feel to it tonight. I'm Jason Mattson. I'll be guiding you through as usual. Tonight on the show, we're going to talk about the combine. Of course, I mean the combine just ended, so we're gonna break down, a few players that wowed us, good or bad. We're gonna talk about a Kentucky Wildcat, Mr. Randall Cobb, discuss his where he fits best in the NFL, and but right now, let's bring in a couple special guests, the Kentucky Wildcats, DeQuinn Evans and Ricky Lumpkin. How's it going, gentlemen?
Oh, it's going good.
I'm doing good.
Had a good night.
Excellent, excellent. Well, let's start with you here, Ricky. 2009, you played at 270 pounds. You made the jump up to around the 300 range. How did that weight gain affect your game?
Oh, it affected it a lot in how you're able to take on double teams a lot easier. You can stand your ground a lot more, and it makes you more durable. At 270, it's already a grind in the SEC, and playing the three technique at 270 is a hard thing to do. And with the 30 pounds on, it made it easier to get my hands on people and be able to move around and get to where I had to be, to where at 270 it was a fight all the time, no matter who you were going against, because of there's a huge weight difference. I was getting out weighed 50 to 60 pounds by some of the guys I was going against in conference.
Right, right. That kind of leads me into my next question. Who was the toughest offensive lineman that you faced in the SEC?
The Pouncey twins, they were both really good. They're technically sound, strong, good with their feet. They're just what you see on TV. First-round draft pick, all-pro centers. And the brother that's about to enter the NFL next year, he's going to be a first-round draft pick, and he's just like his brother. He's going to be all the money he's worth and more. They were by far the best two offensive linemen I've gone against ever.
Excellent. You kind of mentioned about what made them tough. Was it just – the fact that you put on that weight, you kind of mentioned that too, that helped you quite a bit against that NFL talent. What else would you say contributed to your improvement this year on the field?
The ability of just another year in conference and my second year in a row where I was staying healthy and getting the experience I had last year too. I know what was going on, and it was my second year starting the full season. And that helped out a lot because I knew to expect, I knew what was going to happen, I knew what I had to do, and I did it. And it's what improved from my junior to senior year was the experience, the majority of that, knowing how I had to work on my technique, what are the things I needed to work on more in the off season, and I worked hard at it, hand placement, staying low, coming off the football, controlling offensive linemen, and taking the double teams the right way so you don't get pushed back off the ball, and you can free up the linebackers and make the good plays.
Excellent, excellent. We're talking with Ricky Lumpkin here. Let's jump over to your teammate, DeQuinn Evans. You have a great story, DeQuinn. Why don't you tell us how you got started in the game of football?
Well, I got started. Luckily, I was blessed with a cousin who was a Division I football player, played for the University of Southern California. He was highly recruited coming out of high school, and and everything you can do wrong, he did it, and everything you can do right to get back on track, he did it. So, that really helped me out with guiding me through and to just, seeing what I wanted to do in life. And I liked the fame that they had. I liked, him being notarized out in public. And I just loved the way how he got excited on game days and would call me and, tell me to wish him luck and, like check me out on, I'm on the bus with his touchdown. He would always tell me, just him having the time of his life and some of the best, college experience moments that he's ever told me, made me want to experience it myself. So that's what really made me want to go out there and, really get my own taste of it.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I read a few things about you. You got to meet some pretty neat players. I mean, you got to hang out with Reggie Bush and Lindell White, to name a few. I'm sure that didn't hurt, you wanted to play football and seeing what they're all about.
Yeah, just being around those kind of people makes you a lot more comfortable, and it kind of gives you attitude, like, yeah, I can do this too. When you're just as big as some of their defensive linemen and linebackers.
Oh, right. No question. No question. Playing in the SEC, you had to have one player that you'd see out in the open field and you'd be like, damn it, I don't want to face him. Or maybe not you don't want to face him, but, you know, he was very tricky to catch. Who in the open field did you dread seeing when you were in the SEC play?
I didn't really dread seeing nobody because the way that our defense was ran was really to, you know, get underneath blocks so the linebackers can make plays. So I really wasn't worried. You know, that my thing was, you know, getting after it on pass rush downs. But, you know, I can tell you who the coaches had the most problems with. And just looking at it on film, if he banged around the corner on those sweeps, who would be nervous of was, you know, the fastest guy in college football right now, who is Will Demps.
Oh, really?
Or Demps, whatever his first name is, the guy from Florida.
Yeah.
You know, he just won SECs in the 60. So, you know, he's moving. And, you know, you kind of jittery on any guy who can just cover so much ground so quickly.
Definitely.
So that's what we were worried about. Any little, and then he's so small, he can fit in any little creeps and then just get out of there. So all he needs is a little crack or somebody to be out there gap for a half a second, and it can be a huge play, which is a huge momentum swinger, you know, which is, makes it hard to win football games when the other team's got the momentum.
Right. This one's to both of you. Actually, the rest of these questions are going to be directed at both you and Ricky. We'll start off here with you, DeQuinn. Why don't you tell us just a little bit about yourself off the football field? Like, what are some of your hobbies? Maybe hanging out with family or friends, or just anything you like to do.
Well, yeah, you know, one thing that's big for me, I got to talk to my mother every day and see how she's doing. You know,
that's excellent.
I think I'm a huge mama's boy, especially being away from her for so long and used to being around her all the time. And I like to play video games and lift weights and work out. You know, I love to see the results that my body's getting and especially carry them over onto the football field. And that's just little things that I like doing on my free time.
Excellent. What
push-ups, sit-ups tonight.
I'm sure a lot of our listeners would like to know, what games are you playing right now?
My girlfriend, she gets mad at me all the time. She says, are you playing that war game again? And that's a new Call of Duty.
Yeah.
So I'm stuck on that. Me and Rick, we hop online often and we play on teams.
That's great, man. That's been a pretty common theme, that the Call of Duty Black Ops has been a pretty popular one among all the players I've talked to.
I'm about to get me a black light in here and put some face paint on. Really get up there and do it.
like a Busta Rhymes video or something?
Yeah.
Ricky, what about you?
I got my headset on and everything.
What about you, Ricky? What are you like off the football field?
It's basically the same thing DeQuinn said. I'm a person that is real family oriented. I talk to my parents probably every day, both my mom and dad. And if I'm not talking to them, I'm with my teammates, seeing what they're doing, especially younger guys, staying involved with them, making sure they know what the right things to do. I enjoy playing games. Just like DeQuinn said, I play Call of Duty. I play NBA, Madden, NCAA, the best on the Wildcat football team. Still am. It's a mix of things I like to do. I like to go to the movies. If there's a new movie coming out, I will be able to see it.
What's the last movie you saw?
I shall see it. The last one I saw, shoot, who was it? Just Go With It with my girlfriend. We saw Just Go With It with Adam Sandler in it.
Yeah.
And it was a good movie. I'd recommend it. Quite funny.
Well, hey, after your football career, even during it, you could be a movie a reviewer, you know?
Oh, I'll do it. I ain't got a problem with it. That's one of the things I was looking into, was being something with talking. I like to talk, and a critic would be a good job.
Excellent, excellent. We'll stick with you here, Ricky. What position or scheme you think at the next level fits your game the best?
Actually, anyone. I don't have a problem playing any one of them. I was a defensive end in high school, enjoyed that, and then all of college I was defensive tackle. And actually at the Texas versus Nation All-Star game, they moved me out to the five technique. So I feel like I can do anything they want. I don't have a problem playing the left or right side, because at the University of Kentucky, we were told to switch sides and to keep things fresh. there was times where you do a stunt, you become a defensive end, and you learn to lean and be fluent. And there's still things I got to work on out there in the five technique, but there's not one scheme that I think I can't do. I think I can do all of them. It's just recently I've been playing more of a 4-3, so I think I'll be better off in that. But I can do a 3-4. It's fun out there. The five technique is a different – it's a different feel. It's different. It's like more space, more everything. You don't really have to worry about getting double teamed by a guard and tackle. You have to worry about that tackle and a tight end or a running back coming to chip you if you get free.
Yeah.
It's like we're having an all-star game.
So you had a pretty good time playing the five technique, though?
I had a good time with it. It was different just being out there, because when it was a passing situation, you didn't have to worry about a center sliding over to get you. If you got free, you had more freedom than what you do have inside. And I enjoyed it because the last 5 years, being inside, you beat the guard inside. There's a center right there waiting on you, especially in the SEC. The center is going to be there, and he's going to grab onto you.
Yeah.
It's a lot more condensed inside than it is outside.
Definitely, definitely. What about you, DeQuinn? What do you think position scheme-wise fits your talents the best?
Well, you know, a good attribute about me is that I'm real explosive, and I work at everything as hard as I can that I'm not good at, so I can get better at them. I dropped back a couple times this year, and so pretty good at it. And I played a lot of outside linebacker. Our last game versus Pitt, since we got a new defensive coordinator, and I felt real comfortable out there. And I think that'll be a good look for me at the next level. That, you know, stand-up rushing or four-down rushing, you know, my main thing is just really getting after the quarterback when I'm healthy.
Yeah.
You know, so
definitely.
That's one thing that I think is up to me. You know, I still got a lot of work to do. And I'm doing that every day, no matter my shoulder's healing up. But anything where I can drop back into the flats and then at the same time rush the quarterback on the next play, I think those are some of my attributes that I have for filling myself right now.
Now, how's your shoulder healing? How's that? How's the – you had surgery, what, about a month ago? Is that right?
Yeah, 4 weeks ago, yeah. It's just coming along pretty fast. You know, they took the stitches out a lot earlier than they thought that they were going to have to. And my range of motion is looking better than what they thought, you know, early on. And I bench pressed for the first time yesterday just with a plate on each side and, you know, some bands to resist me going up and down. And I felt real good. You know, I'm real sore because I haven't been able to do too much upper body, but I felt real good just going in there and being able to, you know, put some weight off my chest that I haven't been able to do for the last past 3-4 months.
Well, you know, me and you could work out together right now, because that's about what I do. There's a plate on each side. So if you need a spotter, man, just let me know. All right. It's that time of year. Scouts are, they've already watched a lot of your games. They're trying to, you know, nitpick, you know, what you do best, everything like that. DeQuinn, if a scout could watch one game from last year, only one game, which game should he watch and why?
I'd say he would watch the Vanderbilt game, and the reason being that is because first game of my season before I was really hurt, you know, on through until my shoulder started progressing at the end was, you know, you could see my gameplay change significantly. And, you know, just going on to the end of the season, you know, you could just tell my get off, my hands, the way I was rushing the quarterback, you know, the faster I was moving, the more confident I was in my gameplay more than anything. But Vanderbilt, I'll say, just because I got SEC Defensive Lineman of the Week and I had, you know, player of the game and stuff like that and made some huge plays for us, you know, and some dangerous circumstances that, you know, that we were in, that we were faced with. So, you know, I felt like I stepped up big that game, and, you know, that's what my team needed me to do. And if I could tell any scout to watch the film, I'll tell them to watch the Vanderbilt game.
All right, well, we'll definitely keep an eye out for that game, no question. What about you, Ricky? Which game would you suggest to a scout to watch from the past season?
No, mine would be the South Carolina game. I graded out really well after that game with technique and being where I had to be, and I got a lot of good pressure in the backfield. One of my teammates beat me to the sack. Taylor Windham beat me to one of the sacks I got really close to, and it was a really good game for me at the point of attack to where I got my hands on the other guys and was able to control them and get off the ball and be able to make plays. And there's in there where I'm running after a running back down the field on the screen, and that shows my willingness to keep going. Like, I don't give up on plays. I run down the field. I'll run everywhere. I can recall to when we played Georgia, I ran down the field, made the tackle, and the opposing offensive lineman told me, good hustle. And
that's a good feeling.
As a defensive lineman, when you hear that from another player on the opposite team, especially the offensive lineman you're going against, and he tells you that, you know, that's like, thanks. You know, it's, you don't get that often, especially coming from an SEC guy. That means a lot. And, you know, that's what I strive for, is to get those kind of compliments on how I run to the football and how I do hustle to every play.
All right. Ricky, what was your favorite thing about Joker Phillips, the head coach at Kentucky?
He's a people's guy. He really wanted to do stuff the players liked. He would ask us questions, and he would go off of us. He would listen to the players. That's one thing you can say about Joker, is how he listened to the players and to listen to our ideas. He made a leadership committee on the football team, and me and DeQuinn were a part of it. And if we had some ideas from the players, we'd go to him about it. And he didn't just blow them off. He would try to do something about it. Same with Coach Rock. All our coaches were like that, just like him. And that's the best thing about Joker, is he's a good listener, and he'll keep his word on his promises he keeps to the football team.
Excellent. That's a very good trait to have. And building that player's trust is a good thing. What about you, DeQuinn? What did you like about your head coach?
I really liked how he was a player's coach. And the good thing about it is how he's a Kentucky native, and how he's played at UK, and how he's been in all of our shoes before, so he can relate to everything that we got going on. Not saying he was more sympathetic towards us at times. If anything, he would have been more strict, because he said he was doing, you know, everything the right way when he was here. And but the main thing that I liked about him is how you got rewarded for the way that you worked. You know, how he made you a leader off, you know, your leadership skills and the way that you worked off the field. And another thing is how he cared more about you, seemed like he cared more about you becoming a man off the field than a better player on the field. You know, he had so many things going on where people would come and talk to us every Thursday night, just about, you know, elegancy, way to eat properly, you know, when we do get around, you know, higher class people, to, you know, the way you handle yourself in public, to talking to lawyers, to just, you know, other leaders from the Army and the military coming to, you know, talk to us, and making our football team seem like a family more than a football team. And that's one thing that, you know, if I ever get into coaching, that's one, you know, attribute that I would use for my team, because I feel like, you know, all that stuff brought us together closer off the field than, you know, even on the field.
A lot of times you don't hear that about head coaches. They're most concerned about how their players are on the football field and creating that family atmosphere, and, you know, teaching your players to do the right things and how to act in public. Because sometimes people don't know how to act, so they need a mentor in that area. So that's a great trait to have. DeQuinn, Ricky, we do something here at the eighth round. It's called Sell Yourself. Basically, you're going to pretend that myself, John, and Josh are a coaching staff or a group of scouts or front office from a certain NFL team. It doesn't matter which one. And you would tell us why we should select you in the NFL draft. And whoever wants to go first, go right ahead.
I'll go first.
Rick Rock, go ahead, baby.
All right, Ricky.
The reason you select me is I'm a guy that I go off my coaching. If you teach me to do something a certain way, I'm gonna do it. I was never late. I pride myself on being punctual. to class, I would go to class 30 minutes early and then text our academic advisor, let him know I was there. You don't have to worry about me being in trouble on the field or off the field. I'll get the job done. You put it in front of me, I'll know it. I don't forget plays. That's another thing I'm really big on, is knowing what to do. Is if you get rid of me, it won't be because I didn't know what I was doing. It'll be because I messed up with my technique or something little. It won't be because I didn't know where to line up at, which is the simple things you should know. If you just give it to me, I'll learn it. You don't have to worry about me messing up, blowing a blitz, or making excuses. I take the coach and I say, yes, sir, and I keep going until I get the job done.
Perfect. Perfect. All right, DeQuinn, you're up.
I think one huge factor about me is my leadership ability. For the 4 years I did play football, every school that I've been at, I've been a captain. Every class that I'm in, you know, I'm always first to, you know, if we have any kind of team project or something like that, I'm always first to raise my hand and, you know, gather a team together. One thing about me is if I feel like somebody's not, you know, going hard or, you know, trying to get better, you know, I'm going to encourage that other person to get better. You know, I just don't want to see myself get better if my teammates are getting better. I care about my teammates. You can see how much I buy in programs and care about the team. I play, you know, a whole year with a torn labrum, AC joints, sprained MCLs, sprained ankles. And, you know, I did it for my team. You know, I didn't, you know, I know I wasn't going to go out there and perform to my best ability. So it ain't like I was trying to have good NFL film. I knew I wasn't going to be who I was, but I know that just the depth of our team, you know, they needed me out there at the time. And it might not have been the smartest decision, but, you know, I felt like in my heart that I was doing the right thing for my team and, you know, sacrificing the little things that I did, you know, to help us win. And, you know, I'm always working hard. You can go and ask Coach Rock. You know, he came up to me the other day and he said, I don't know what it is about you, but I've never seen a guy work the way that you do. And that's just something that I think I was blessed with. I really don't think you can really coach a work ethic or coach a motor. And I think that's something that me and Ricky are both, you know, fortunate enough to have. So those are some of the things you can get. You know, my main thing is I try to not have a coach me on the same thing twice. You know, if I'm going to get coached on something, coach me on something new, because I'm doing the last thing right that you coached me on the last time. So, you know, I'm very coachable. And, you know, I'm always trying to get the team better as far as bettering myself.
Excellent, excellent. So it sounds like we'd be getting some definitely hard work, intelligence, leadership, everything that a team needs, you know, from their defensive captain. So I appreciate you guys, you know, everything that you did tonight. It was a great interview. Before you go, we're getting ready to talk about your teammate here, Randall Cobb. Would you guys maybe one or two words about him? What would you say about Randall Cobb?
Randall Cobb is a guy to where you already know what you're going to get from him. Great playmaker and a hell of a leader. And he puts it all into emotion. He's emotionally into it. Great teammate. And he wants the best for his team.
Right. Anything to add to Quinn?
Yeah, I feel the same way. I feel like football is probably the most emotional game that you can play. And a person that doesn't play with emotion, you know, if something's wrong. But, yeah, that guy wore his emotions on his sleeve, and he played, you know, like, you know, we were going out there on a battlefield for each other, and he was willing to lay it all down for his brothers. And, you know, just a guy with great work ethic, never missed a workout. You know, always trying to help his teammates out to get better. I'd always see him coaching up the younger wide receivers, and just, you know, a phenomenal guy off the field.
Awesome.
Real good friend.
Perfect. So, I mean, we don't even need to talk about him. You guys did a great job of breaking it down. Josh or John, did you guys have any questions for DeQuinn or Ricky?
I had one that if you guys, Ricky, if you had a second here, just real quick, you mentioned about getting your hands on the offensive lineman and how that is pretty important. Maybe if you could just talk real quick about how important that is and maybe what the biggest factor is in getting the inside hand placement. Is it like your get up off the football, your first step, or just strength?
It's real important. If you get your hands on the opposing offensive lineman, you basically can do anything you want with them. And to get the hands inside, it's more of get off,
isn't that really your first step? What we were taught this year was coming out your hips and shooting your hands at the same time. That way when you do punch him and you get your hands inside, you shock him backwards and you mess up his power base. And basically you get him pushed up the field. And then that way it's easier to get off those blocks, to make the big plays, to get those TFLs and tackles for loss. And if you can do that, you'll be successful in any league, any grade level, middle school, high school, NFL, anywhere you play. It's real important. You don't want to get your hands outside. You want to get them inside nice and tight so you can get off the ball, because if the offensive line gets his hands inside of you, they can hold you all day. They're not going to get caught. And the thing is, what probably any college player is told is holding is a personal problem. It happens every play. The thing is, what are you going to do about it? And that's something that Coach Turner preached to us and Coach Petrie preached to us when he was here, was get your hands inside, get your hand placement. If you do that, you'll win every time.
Thanks, man. I think that's an excellent breakdown. We're going through defensive linemen right now on the site, and I think that's a good insight to what you guys are taught and how important hand placement is.
Thank you.
Well, I had just a small question for DeQuinn, because I find it interesting that he only played 1 year in high school, went to a community college, and then got, a scholarship to the SEC. So I was kind of curious how that kind of came about when you're in a community college. Do you send your tape out to places? Do they come looking for you? Like, what is involved in that? Are you kind of out for yourself to try to find a scholarship at the next level?
Well, I didn't play no high school football. My first year playing football was 2007, over four seasons. That was my first year ever playing football. It was 2007. And then a lot of scouts came out because, luckily, when you have good players on your team, we're a real good wide receiver. Chris Matthews was getting looked at, a guy beforehand. We called Santana. He was getting a lot of looks. He went to Akron. Just because of grades. We had a lot of guys that could have went to SC, could have went to some real big powerhouse schools, but the grades were just holding them back. And then when they came out there and they seen the way that I played and they seen the way that I worked, just the little stuff, this is what they told me. I was like, what did you like? A lot of people said they didn't even look at film on me. And, but they just came out and seen, the way that I worked, checked my one-on-ones out, and they just told me, they like the way I did the little things. Like, right after I'm done, with one-on-one, I'll run back, to the end of the line and get ready to go again and stuff. And they like my physique, and they like the way that I would, always have motivated in football. So they would all come out, and they'll just talk to me, call me up, see what type of character I have. And then, that was my first year. I didn't even think I was a Division I football player. I knew I was making plays, but I didn't think I was that good. And then, I was getting several looks. My first trip was to Oregon, then I went to Kansas, then I went to Nevada, and I went to USC, and then I came to Kentucky. And I didn't know the strength of the SEC, just growing up in California, being a Pac-10 guy, my cousin was at USC. So, growing up, favoring USC a little bit just because my cousin went there, and that's who I was cheering for until I got here. And I could just tell looking at the guys on Sundays and playing against the guys on Saturdays that they have a lot of the same features. And, nine times out of ten, the guy that you're playing on Saturday, you might face the same guy or be playing with them on Sunday. And but that's really how I got here, though, just off of my coaches knowing people and scouts coming out to look at other people, and then they seen me. Then they finally got film on me, and then I put it on YouTube and stuff like that. Then I had all type of views. And that's how my name really got out there, though. Then the newspaper came, and they did a huge article on me, the Daily Breeze newspaper in California. And, a lot of coaches were seeing that, and I started really getting notarized, and my name started ringing a little bells out there. But the main thing that really got me focused on doing what I had to do and everybody noticing me was this JC camp that I went to. I went to camp, did real good, ran like a 4.69. Had a real good shuttle time, and I won every one-on-one drill and called everybody out. Probably acted out a little too much because I was hyper. finally got a chance to go get some other guys, and I got a text message from the dude who worked for scoutfootball.com, and the next day I was a five-star athlete. And then I think just off that helped me out a lot.
Well, so you got a great story, DeQuinn, that hard work and high character will take you places. And I wish the best of luck to both of you guys.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank y'all for having us on tonight.
Of course, man. Anytime. We'd love to have you back on after after it's all said and done, or even before that. We can talk about what's going on in your lives and who you end up with, and just wish you the best of luck, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Ricky Lumpkin and DeQuinn Evans from the University of Kentucky. Like they said, watch the Vanderbilt and the South Carolina games to see what they're all about. All right, so now we've talked to a couple of his teammates, DeQuinn Evans and Ricky Lumpkin. Let's jump into the they kind of broke down Randall Cobb for us already, but let's jump right into it. We have John Dove, Josh DeCuster, and Matthew Fairburn on the line with us here. Gentlemen, we're going to talk about Randall Cobb. How does he fit into an NFL offense? Where does he fit in? Where do you think he gets drafted? Some strengths and weaknesses. John, let's start with you. What are your thoughts on Randall Cobb?
And I think everyone here is going to agree with me. I don't have anything probably different than most have about Randall Cobb. And what I see from him, he's just a guy that has real loose hips with the ability to make people miss in space and get some wiggle out there and create some separation. And the biggest thing with him is going to be his versatility, his ability to line up in the backfield, to line up in the slot, line up on the outside. I think that he's a guy that if he goes to a team with a real creative offensive coordinator, that's where he'll be best utilized. If he goes to a team that, likes to line up and run power football, he may get lost in the shuffle a little bit. So hopefully for his sake and, the fans of the NFL, if you want to see an electric football player really making plays, you'd like to see a guy like Randall Cobb wind up on a team with a real, just a real bright offensive coordinator, someone that isn't afraid to mix it up and stick a guy in the wildcat or put him in the backfield and motion him out. Kind of what the Vikings were doing a little bit with Percy Harvin, even giving him a handoff here and there. I think that's something a kind of fit for Cobb at the next level. And I think maybe he's a late second, early third round prospect. And I heard some saying even as high as the first. I don't necessarily see him as a first round guy, but I think he's a solid second round, early third round prospect in my opinion.
Definitely. Josh, what do you have to add?
Well, I think that the Percy Harvin comparison is quite apt, although I do think Harvin is a much better athlete than Cobb. But that versatility, I think he'll make a big impact too, because he's a guy who's going to be able to return punts and kicks, as well as be that versatile role player who can work the slot against safeties and linebackers, or make big plays running out of the backfield. He could even, if you want to throw in five wildcat plays a game, he's another guy that could do that for you there. He was actually all freshman SEC as a quarterback when he first came out before they moved him to wide receiver. So he does have some skills in that area. And I think he could easily go in the mid second round and to early first. Again, he's not quite the elite athlete. That's why I don't see him in the first round. But he is definitely a dangerous offensive player that I don't think a lot of defenders would want to go up against.
All right, Matthew, what are your thoughts on Randall Cobb?
I agree with these guys. He's going to cause a lot of matchup problems. He's with his versatility, and he'll make a great slot receiver at the next level for sure. And he obviously draws comparisons to Dexter McCluster, and McCluster found a home in the second round. So I think that's a good spot for Cobb this year.
Definitely, definitely. And I'm not really familiar. How much did he return kicks and special teams at Kentucky? Do you guys know?
I can tell you that in his senior year, this past year, he averaged 7.8 yards a punt return with one touchdown. He averaged 23.7 yards on kickoffs, no touchdowns, but he had 31 returns this year on kickoffs and 28 returns on punt returns.
So that's definitely another aspect of his game. I mean, his quick. I think he's very quick. He's more quick than fast, as they like to say.
He's not necessarily the long speed guy, though. He can do that as well. It's the in space, like John said, he's in space. He's going to make guys miss, and he's going to, you know, outburst you once he finds that hole.
Definitely. The Percy Harvin and Dexter McCluster comparisons are pretty spot on. So what is there a team, I mean, that you guys think that could use a Randall Cobb type? I mean, I'm sure a lot of teams could, but is there one that maybe pops out in your mind that's, you know, they need a slot receiver, they need a number two receiver with the Randall Cobb type? Matthew, Josh, John, any of you want to jump on that one?
I want to say that I really like, you know, I talked about an innovative offensive coordinator, and I think a team like the St. Louis Rams, who need help all along their receiving core, could take a flyer on this guy in the second or third round, and he would really fit in nicely in that offense, give Sam Bradford another weapon, and just take some of the pressure off him, because you could just, you know, do a little swing pass to Cobb and let him make guys miss, and that's something that a young quarterback loves. It takes pressure off their shoulders and gets a little rhythm going for them with those quick, easy passes.
That would mean that they wouldn't take Julio Jones in the first round, right?
No.
Do they still have a chance?
I mean, yeah. That's, I think if I'm the Rams and I can get Julio Jones in the first and Randall Cobb still sitting in there in the second or third, I wouldn't hesitate to select both of them. I just think their receiving core is that depleted, and, you know, Mark Clayton came in and played well, but he's injured and he's a free agent this year. There's no guarantee of him returning. I mean, Denario Alexander had a few bright spots, but there was a reason though he was undrafted. And even if he was drafted, you know, he can only top out so high. And I think he's a nice complimentary piece, but no one on that roster, in my opinion, fits what Cobb and, if you know, if they had a shot at Julio Jones, could bring to that team.
Don't the Rams have, maybe I'm wrong here, don't they have Danny Amendola, who had a million catches?
Again, I mean, do you see, in my opinion, I think Cobb's much more of an electric player. Nothing against Amendola. I think, you know, he's a nice, complimentary piece. But if you have a chance to really upgrade, and I think Cobb is an upgrade over Amendola, in my opinion, I think you got to take that.
And it looks like they have taken a Kentucky receiver in the past. They took Keenan Burton in the fourth round. So maybe history will repeat itself. I don't know.
I happen to think that the Ravens will probably be looking at a guy like this to stretch the field. They got Bolden, who's a great possession receiver, and a bunch of other guys. And having a guy like Cobb who could stretch the field and work the slot would definitely help him out.
Yeah, I got sleepy just you talking about the Ravens wide receivers. They're so boring. All right. Well, the combine, it wrapped up this morning, right? The cornerbacks and the safeties, they did their thing on the 40-yard dash, and they did all their drills today. I'd like to talk about some guys that maybe surprised you, both good and bad. Josh, let's start with you. Who surprised you in a good way or a bad way, or maybe both?
Well, I wouldn't say it was in an overtly good way, but I was kind of surprised by how athletic Julio Jones ended up being. On tape, he does appear fast, and he seems to be quite an athlete, but not to the level that he tested at the combine. So that was really surprising for me in a good way. And that's one of the reasons why I think the gap between he and AJ Green might not be as big as it once was. Bad, Akeem Mayers really disappointed me from the standpoint that he didn't perform well in any of the drills or in the 40. I thought he'd be a much faster guy. On tape, he's just so versatile and such a big factor in the games. It was really surprising to see how badly he tested at the combine.
I agree. What about you, Matthew?
Guy that sort of hurt his stock in my eyes is Ryan Mallett. Some of those character concerns started to come out. He didn't really impress anyone in the interviews, especially when he was with the press. He just came off as an unlikable guy and someone who teams more than likely won't want leading their franchise. A guy I really liked was Phil Taylor. out of Baylor. He had a good combine. He's a huge dude, but he still managed to run in the low fives in his 40, and he actually shed some weight, which is good. He could sneak into the first round. And I think Prince Amukamara cracking 4.3 on the 40 was helped solidify him as a top 10 pick.
I got a bunch of guys here I would like to get into, really. First thing, though, I kind of disagree a little bit with Matthew there about Ryan Mallett. I mean, maybe it did hurt his stock. In my opinion, it really didn't. The presser interview that he's talking about where he was maybe asked five times or more about his drug issue. Each time he gave a, you know, I'll deal with that in the personal team interviews, and the questions just continued to come about it. I don't blame him for getting frustrated. He probably could have handled it better. My thing, and I've been talking about this a little bit recently, is players are, you know, he doesn't just go out there on a whim and answer these questions. He's coached. He has people that he's paying to help him answer questions like this, and I'm sure he was told, you know, don't discuss it. Just tell these guys you're gonna talk about it with the individual teams. Well, it kind of backfired on him. He had to walk off the podium. I don't know. I guess maybe I'm the last guy that's still kind of in the corner of Ryan Mallett. I have yet to see any concrete proof that he has major character issues or has a drug problem.
And before you go on to your next player too, did you I think it was Sports by Brooks on Twitter today. He made a comment, and he's usually spot on with all his stuff. He said that opposing quarterbacks and players' agents have been leaking this stuff to draftniks about Mallett, and it's completely not true.
Yeah,
and they want them to write like a bad report or a bad say he's a horrible person.
Either way, whether the drug stuff's true or not, I think he's sort of. Every time I see him interviewed and all the stuff I hear about him from teammates and guys around the league, it just seems like not that many people like him. There's a lot of rumors, not a lot of stuff that's concrete, but you never heard any of those rumors about, you know, Sam Bradford, Matthew Stafford, any of those guys. And I don't know if this stuff would get leaked if there wasn't something to it. You know what I mean?
I'm not discounting that there's any behind-the-scene issues here with Ryan Mallett. My problem is I don't like to jump on these character issue bandwagons. I mean, obviously, when there's rumors out there and there's things going on, you got to take that into account. You cannot just completely overlook it. And Mallett's stock, in my mind, has taken a bit of a hit. I won't go as far as saying he's not worthy of a first-round pick. I'm not going to go as far as saying, you know, he's not worthy of a second-round pick. I think he has that talent. And is a guy that can make the plays and develop into a good NFL quarterback, but is he worth a top 10 risk if all this smoke is out there? You know, Matthew said, sometimes when there's smoke, there is fire, and we'll find out, I'm sure, as April approaches. The NFL teams are the ones that had the individual interviews with Ryan Mallett. They're the ones that are going to be paying tons of money to investigate his background if they're going to risk a high pick on him. Just hopefully at some point the truth comes out and we can all put that into our evaluations of the guy. But until then, I mean, I'm not going to beat him up over that interview. It wasn't great. To me, it wasn't a killer in his draft stock. I would have been frustrated if the same thing happened to me. Just getting into a couple other guys that I really liked in the combine, I think it helped their stock. Obviously, Julio Jones, the guy's a monster. I agree with you, Josh. I was a little shocked at the 40 time. That was at 220 pounds. That's an amazing 40 time.
With a broken foot, no less.
Yeah. It's great. And, you know, he plays. He had a good career at Alabama. He had some drops, but I think in the NFL, I think this guy's going to be a very, very good wide receiver, top 10 pick in my mind, no doubt. Especially after the combine, I really like what Marcell Dareus did. At 312, you know, he ran a good 40. He showed very good quickness and explosion in all the other drills. I think the cornerback class took a big leap forward, and I think you could, you know, you see guys like obviously Peterson and Amy Kamara in the top of that draft are very, very good prospects. But Jimmy Smith came out. He ran a blazing speed at he's 212, 6'2". He's a big cornerback. He runs a 4.38 40. That, I mean, character issues again with him. There's some red flags with this guy, but all that aside, you know, he's a legitimate cornerback prospect. And Brandon Harris from Miami just showed good fluidity, good hip movement, good flexibility. I think he's a guy that also is going to see his stock rise. I mean, I think you could see all four corners come off the board in the top 20 picks, especially those four right there. I think that this cornerback class is gaining some steam. One last guy, and I know I covered a bunch already that I really liked, and I think I'm finally able to nail down a little bit better of an opinion of him, is J.J. Watt. He came out and he tested very well athletically, and if there was anything I had concerns with was his explosion and his athletic ability. I really couldn't get a good feel for that on the games that I've watched. And, you know, coming out and running a good 40 time and just looking like a good athlete really helped his stock, in my opinion. Somebody I didn't like, and not sure if it really hurt his stock or just kind of kept it where it should be, maybe, is Robert Quinn. The 4.740 is not a great time for someone that was heralded as probably one of the better athletes in this draft class. I'm not sure how far he'll fall, but I thought there was a lot of talk out there if he came out, ran a blazing speed, that he would be able to, you know, catapult into the top three. I think he came out, what he ran and what he did, I think he's still in the top 10, but maybe a little bit further down. But he didn't get the boost that he was hoping.
Definitely good stuff, John. Just a couple for me real quick. I thought that Martez Wilson really improved or solidified his first-round status. I liked what Johnny Baldwin did. His vertical jump, his 40 was pretty good. Guy that I thought would do better was Jeremy Beal. He defensive player of the year in the Big 12 and not very explosive. Didn't really look like he was in that good of a shape, but those are just a few guys that wowed me and disappointed me. Josh, you had one more that you'd like to talk about?
Yeah, one more that I don't know. I was kind of thinking maybe I should hang on to him as a sleeper because he's not considered one of the top guys. But Marcus Cannon, he's an offensive tackle from TCU, but I think his future is going to be at guard in the NFL. He weighed in. I didn't see the weigh-ins, but I remember reading in the weigh-in he was like 360 pounds at 6'4", and thinking, man, this guy is going to be just a big old, you know, kind of slobby, fatty guy, you know. But I got to watch the lineman drills, you know, over the weekend, and he carries 360 pounds better than I carry 190. And he moved really well, was really fluid, and I just think that size and his ability to move it laterally at guard, you know, he could work against those big nose tackles in the 3-4 and be able to handle them because he's already that big and athletic.
Great point. I forgot about him completely, but yeah, he looked very athletic. I watched it online, his 40 and him going through some drills, and he looked extremely athletic for 360 pounds or 358, I think, is his exact number.
The official number, yes.
Yeah, I'm sure he's back up to 368 now after.
Yeah, and that might be one thing to watch for. You know, what was his weight like? Did it fluctuate a lot in college, or is he going to be able to maintain that 358?
Yeah, will he eat himself out of the league? Like, was a guy from Wisconsin about 10 years ago, Aaron Gibson. I think he was about a 500-pound offensive guard or something like that.
Didn't the Redskins have like a 410-pound lineman this past season?
Possibly.
I could have swore they had someone who was just ridiculously huge, but sorry, tangent.
It's all good. It's all good. Well, you guys have anything else you want to add tonight?
No, I'm good.
It's a great talk, guys. We're going to have more stuff on the website this week, I'm assuming.
Definitely.
We're going to have three more videos this weekend on the YouTube channel. We're going to be we're going to have Villanova versus Eastern Washington in the FCS playoff semifinals, USC versus Stanford, and Oregon State versus Washington. And if we're lucky, maybe a little Wisconsin coming up there.
Very cool. Very cool. Matthew, you got anything you want to add this week? What's going on with the team needs?
Thursday, I'm covering the Detroit Lions. Last week, my mock draft, I mocked them a left tackle, and it caused quite a stir in the comments. I mean, I figure that's a need, but we got some Jeff Backus supporters who think otherwise, so be sure to be on the lookout for that on Thursday.
All right, excellent. And
I'm working on a couple scouting reports right now, a couple articles, and we have a pretty big guest joining us. We're going to have multiple podcasts this week, so stay tuned for that. We have a pretty big guest, and it should be a fun show. So stay tuned for all the podcasts and everything that's going on with Mocking the Draft. Check it daily, hourly, and also check out the YouTube page that Josh is putting together. All right, well, that wraps it up for this edition of the 8th round, and we thank you so much for joining us. Later.